Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome back Sean Eisenhower to the podcast. Welcome back, Sean.
Hey, James. Good to be here.
Well, Sean, thanks for joining us today. Now, for those that may not be familiar with you, you are a founding partner at Iridicio. You spend a lot of time speaking, training, and you've been doing this for quite a while. Can you give us a brief background on kind of how you got started in maintenance reliability and that journey to today?
Sure, absolutely. So I started pretty early on. In fact, my father was a diesel mechanic. And because of that, when I was old enough to hold a wrench, I was free labor. So I spent a lot of time underneath large semis and that sort of thing, and realized pretty early on that there had to be a better way to do some of these things. So from there, I ended up going to engineering school at NC State, and then off to work in the engineering field after that. Worked with companies like Sunoco as well as ExxonMobil, and then left that world and went into the dark side, as we say, into the consulting world. And now I've worked in about 45 or 50 countries, and I've worked pretty much for years all around holistic implementation of reliability. So everything from planning and scheduling and root cause analysis all the way through MRO stores and all the other details of work execution.
All right. Excellent. Now, I'm sure along the way you've started learning something about root cause analysis. How long have you been involved in the root cause analysis part of maintenance and reliability?
Well, I had my first root cause analysis class at my very first employer. That was way back in probably it would have been the late 90s, early 2000. So I sat through my first root cause class, and I learned that there was more to problems than just the things that we see. And it was a bit of an eye opener. I got to do a little bit of it, but I didn't do a ton of it until I moved into ExxonMobil, where I was responsible for doing quite a few RCAs. And really and truly, if we're honest, it's where I made a lot of the early mistakes that I now recognize and we'll talk about from the tip standpoint.
Excellent. So what is root cause analysis? What are we really trying to accomplish with it? What are we trying to do? Because a lot of people say we get to root cause, but what really is that?
Well, I mean, there's a lot to talk about here. I mean, the first thing that I always let people know is there really isn't anything called root cause analysis. In reality, it's root causes. And I say that because what I've noticed over time and what I've learned from a lot of folks that have been willing to mentor me over the years is that, you know, there is not one cause specifically for the problem. There are multiple things, sometimes known as actions and conditions. I believe Dean Gano refers to them that way. But actions and conditions that come together to cause these problems. And, you know, some people think of that as a bad thing. But in reality, I think it's a good thing as a problem solver because it gives me multiple potential solutions instead of one specific, very expensive or very hard to implement solution moving forward. But the real gist of root cause analysis in a nutshell is understanding the problem first and then implementing a solution that reduces the risk to a level that you believe is acceptable. Which is my second point. I don't necessarily think with many of the solutions that we put in play, we're eliminating the root cause. In many cases, we're just mitigating it or reducing the effects because that makes better business sense from that perspective.
All right. Excellent. Now,
getting to root cause or root causes, understanding what activities and actions we need to take to reduce that risk to as low as reasonably possible or practical for us, that's a difficult process. And in my experience, we need a good facilitator to help drive the team towards coming up with those solutions. Now, what role do you think the facilitator plays in executing a root cause analysis?
Well, I think the facilitator is absolutely critical, and it's probably one of the things that is really hard for a lot of us to do. In fact, I said something a few years ago in a blog post that kind of spun some folks up. But the point that I made was that, you know, many facilitators are also subject matter experts, and that really causes them a lot of problems when it comes time to investigate root causes. I'm a firm believer that I would rather my facilitators of root cause not be my subject matter experts. I of course, want those subject matter experts participating and a part of the discussion, but I really want to do my best from my perspective to have a facilitator who is unbiased and open and okay with asking the dumb questions.
All right. So we want a facilitator who's not the subject matter expert, okay with asking those quote unquote dumb questions. You know, what else are we really looking at for a facilitator? Are they supposed to be someone who's very good at engaging the group, just asking those dumb questions? What are the qualities we're looking for in that facilitator?
We want someone who can really get the group to come out of their shell, if you will. And then sometimes we want them to get back into their shell. I've been at a few root cause investigations over the years where, you know, controlling the group that was participating was the biggest part of the challenge. A lot of emotions in the room, a lot of just concern, maybe some embarrassment. And so all of those things are going to rear their head, and the facilitator needs to be ready to deal with those, all of them.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've been in some root cause analysis activities as well, and you get the two subject matter experts that are arguing about why this occurred or why it didn't occur, and back and forth. And if we can't contain them and keep them on track, they distract the whole group. The whole group gets upset. They get distanced. They zone out. All that stuff happens. So being able to pull people out is just as important as being able to get people to quietly move on. And if those two subject matter experts want to argue it outside of the room, by all means, but we can't let them hijack that activity or event.
Well, and when we get down into the tips here in a little bit, I'll talk about some things that I think can help a facilitator, both dealing with the quiet folks in the room, but also dealing with those noisy ones.
All right. Excellent. Now, what are the first things that facilitator, once we've selected them, should be doing to assemble a team to solve problems? Because we can't have just one person solving root cause.
Absolutely. So the first thing, I'm going to address kind of two points there. The first part of it is that, you know, you really need to understand your problem statement first. You know, what is the issue? It's kind of like when you're thinking about implementing an initiative, you really need to have a vision and a mission. And the problem statement is the vision and mission for a root cause analysis team. So I think the first thing is having a clear understanding of that problem that you're facing, because the second step is going to be understanding the business case for actually doing the investigation. So not the business case for the solution or the new technology you want to buy or whatever, but specifically, was this a big enough problem that it warrants me getting a group together? And what kind of group? And a lot of times I will use a three-tiered approach. If it's a simple problem, it's annoying, but it's not something that has a huge financial impact and it's not something that meets the other triggers that we have, then I might do a simple investigation where I go out into the area and spend a few minutes looking around, take a look, and maybe put that into the CMMS as a failure code moving forward. But the second level for me is that problem that has a little more potential to it. It has the ability to reoccur. It has occurred multiple times, but it's not catastrophic. It's not something that I want to go full on. And in that situation, I might go out and put together a small team of two or three people and have some conversation. And you could really debate how you structure these two or three levels. My third level is, it's a big deal. It's a safety issue. It's an environmental issue. It cost us multiple hours of downtime or multiple days of downtime. And in that situation, I'm going to bring everyone out of the area and bring them into a root cause analysis process, probably in a conference room or completely separate. So if one is trying to find a simple answer and maybe a failure code to put in the CMMS or EAM, two is about me going out to them and learning what I can from them and then working through the process. And then three being one of those more severe root causes, I'm going to go ahead and bring them to the conference room, and we're going to spend probably multiple sessions going through the problem and really trying to understand it.
All right. So depending upon the level of the problem, the facilitator is going to pick different teams. They're going to take different approaches to facilitating that RCM event or that RCA event, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's, you know, one of the things that I think that I have seen over the years is there is no one way solution to problem solving. And I talk about it all the time as using the right tool for the job. And that right tool can be a couple of people, or that right tool can be an 8-person team sitting around a conference table. The same goes for the tools we use themselves. I mean, that right tool may be a 5 whys on a very simple problem, but that is certainly not the right tool for a large safety issue or something that has cost us a lot of downtime.
All right, excellent. So the facilitators assembled the team. You know, we kind of got things organized because we know what level of problem we're solving. What is the next tip our facilitators need to know to move the team in the right direction, get the right answers, get the team engaged?
Well, I think the next thing is getting them engaged. And I think that's critical. And what we talk about in our root cause analysis class is that there are some pre-analysis tools that you can use. And they're not designed necessarily to get someone to root causes. It is more so to help you as a facilitator know what questions you want to ask. So you can spend a few minutes or even a few hours prepping so that when you walk into that facilitated root cause environment, you already have questions to get them started talking. You know, hey, is this happen on one shift or does it happen on all the shifts? Does it happen a certain time of the day? Does the weather have anything to do with it? You know, all these different questions that you can bring in to start getting people involved in the analysis. The second thing that I think that does for you is it gives you some credibility. Now, I think back to my early days at ExxonMobil. I would walk into a room to do an RCA, and I'd be the youngest person in the room by 25 years. And so credibility wasn't something that I walked in the room with. And so if I can come into the room and start asking the right kinds of questions, that builds my credibility. It builds my trust and really feeds the rest of the investigation as we move forward. The third thing that I would talk about is getting people engaged. And I've learned a few techniques over the years, and I'll share those with you now. First of all, I'm a huge proponent of using super sticky notes. And that's super sticky because they'll stick to a lot of surfaces better than some of the knockoff, more inexpensive type of notes that are available. 3M's welcome to sponsor me as we move forward. The second thing is to get people involved, get away from the software. I see so many people, they're so dead set on using software for root cause analysis and really even for FMEAs. And as soon as they bend over and start typing on that computer, the audience just checks out. They're gone. So you lose all that interaction and all that knowledge and all that history that they have contained because of the software. So I'm a big proponent of using those sticky notes, getting on that whiteboard, getting people engaged, staying up on that whiteboard, and then I'll worry about how we're going to archive it after we finish. The third thing that I like to do is to make sure that I give out sticky notes to the group as well as have them in my hands. And I do that because there are some folks over the years that I've run into during these investigations that would really rather not talk. They're quiet, they're introverted, they really, maybe they're even nervous about what they know or what they might say and how it might be taken. So let them write on a post-it note and let them kind of anonymously stick those up to the board. On the flip side, there are some folks that would rather not write. And so that's why I have sticky notes in my hands. And I'm going around the table and I'm soliciting information from folks and filling them out as well. So that way I'm meeting both needs of the group, whether they would rather write and keep it anonymous or whether they would rather tell me and I write it down and stick it up there. And that's been a good tool for getting a group to really participate over the years.
Yeah. And the one thing that I've learned you can do with those sticky notes, if you're resourceful, is you give everyone a different color. And you can kind of see who's engaged and who's just there to visit, if you will.
Absolutely. I try to keep that a secret because I like to use that one a lot as well, James. It's a good way to be able to see who's participating and who's not. And in fact, if you look at me as I'm walking around facilitating an RCA, I will have multiple colored sticky notes in my hand for that very reason. Even if they tell it to me, I'm trying to stay with the color that I've given them.
All right. Excellent. You listed off some very good tips there. Now, for those that use the software for capturing that information, reporting purposes, those sorts of things, we're not saying not to use the software. We're saying to capture the information, do the analysis in an engaging way, and then you can turn around, put it into the software after the fact. Once the team is gone, that's part of the role of facilitator, correct?
Well, that's what you're saying, James. I'm actually saying a little bit more. I'm taking a hard stance on this a little bit, and it's not that I don't like software. I'm not that old curmudgeon who doesn't like computers. But by the same token, I'm going into a lot of facilities from an assessment perspective, and I go in to assess the organization, and yes, they've spent money on software for tracking RCAs, and yes, they could report them up to the organization, but I start to realize fairly quickly they haven't done any real root cause investigations. So the software becomes, you know, a great tool, but they're not using it. And the second problem I've got is they go to a class and they spend, you know, if it's a 2 or a 3 day class, they spend a day and a half learning how to use the software. That's a day and a half that I could have used to better my problem solving skills. So it's not that I'm anti-software, as you said, but I am taking a harder stance to say, once you get good enough at RCA and you start doing enough of them that you could actually need to organize and sort them, then the software is your friend. It is your tool. It is exactly what you need. But most people struggle to get going with RCA, and I don't want to put the barrier of software in the way.
All right. So figure out your problem-solving process first, make sure it's effective, and then once you have lots coming out that are actually effective, then use the software to organize them, correct?
Absolutely. So the way I think about it is we need to be first effective and then efficient. And I think that's my mantra as I think about root cause analysis. I need to be effective with my problem solving. I need to get down into the latent and systemic roots. I need to understand how I'm going to implement the solutions and verify that I'm getting results. That's effective. And then as I start building a library of these RCAs, I'll worry about efficiency and I'll start sorting them and putting them into software and allowing other people to see them and networking them across the whole organization so that other sites can use my findings.
Okay. Gotcha. Just want to make sure we were clear on when to use, when not to use that software. All right. Now, What are the other steps that or tips that you may have to once the group's engaged, they're interactive, what else should facilitators be doing to make sure that we're effective in our problem solving?
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value-added work you are doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com.
Well, there's some things that I think, or at least one or two that I'll mention here that are just cautions. And they come from me making mistakes in the past and realizing it maybe not as soon as I should have. But one in particular is, if you're going to allow people to write on post-it notes, like I said, you are going to get some duplication, no matter what tool you're using, whether you're using sequence of events or event and causal factor, or whether you're using one of the tree tools, and you're getting down into the roots from that perspective, it really doesn't matter. You're going to get duplication. Someone's going to say something, they're going to write it down on a piece of paper, and someone else is going to do the same thing, and you're going to have doubles. Two things there. First of all, just because they look like they're the same, don't dispose of one of them and keep the other, because you just valued one person's idea and you kind of pooed on the other one. So even though they may say the same thing, I like to stack them together as I go through, just to show that they both have value. I'm not just tossing one to the side. And that specifically comes from me over the years tossing duplicates and not realizing it. But now when I stand back and watch others facilitating RCAs from a coaching standpoint, I can see the effect that has on those individuals. The second thing that I'll tell you is that it is very important to understand if they really are the same. And the reason I say that is because over the years, I've had multiple times that someone wrote the exact same words verbatim on a post-it note. But when I started really asking questions and trying to understand that post-it note more, I found out that they were really talking about two completely different causes. So, definitely do your best to keep them engaged by verifying what they've written on that little post-it note and by not disposing of any of those ideas, even if they are the same.
Okay, excellent. You can definitely see how that would impact those that are participating or those that were on the fence about participating, and you take away their sticky versus someone else's, you lost that person, especially if they were on the fence.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'll give you a couple more kind of along this same guys. This is the whole idea of making sure you don't mess up the facilitation process as you go forward. Something else that I know I struggle with, and I imagine many of your listeners do as well, especially when you've got a few years of experience like some of us do, you start to think back to what worked one time before or what problem you saw one time before. You really, really need to be careful when you're facilitating root cause that you are not guiding them down a path. And one way to do that is everything that comes out of your mouth should be pre-challenged before it's mentioned to the group. And what I mean by that is, if you think, oh, I bet you this right here is false Brunelling, obviously it's a storage practice issue, you need to go ahead and think about in advance, first of all, did that really happen? Do I have any evidence that said that happened? Do I have any evidence that says that didn't happen? And if I mention it, am I speaking it as the gospel, or am I speaking it as another idea that we can then consider to verify and eliminate if the data proves to be true?
All right. So make sure we're very cautious as facilitators not to lead or direct the group, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I've often seen where facilitators will almost start solving the problem based on their experience with very little group input because of how they ask questions, how they make suggestions, and those sorts of things. So a good facilitator is there to guide, not solve.
That's exactly right. I can point to more than one investigation that I've either been involved in, maybe was leading or was part of a group that looked over it after the fact. And in many of those, you can very much see where the facilitator had a favorite solution. And all they did after they made that statement was spend the rest of the time proving that they were right. And that is not an effective way to do root causes analysis.
No, absolutely not. Excellent. Now, do you have any more tips for facilitating RCAs that we didn't cover?
I've got two things that I would say from a facilitation standpoint. And this is one that people struggle with a lot, but don't be afraid to change your problem statement. Don't be afraid to change your problem statement. So as you dig deeper into the problem and you start to understand more about it, you may realize that this problem isn't confined just to this area, or you may realize that this problem is confined very much to a specific issue. And so don't be afraid to take the time, pause the group, reevaluate your problem statement, maybe even rewrite it in a different way, communicate that to the group, and then continue on. And the reason I say that is by making those adjustments to your problem statement, you can actually make the investigation less arduous, if you will, less work. Because you can kind of narrow in on a specific issue, or in some cases, broaden out or even depart completely. And I'll give a real example. Years ago, I was doing an investigation where compressed air line pressure and volume was all over the place and no one could really get it under control. And we were really just investigating one piece of equipment that was having a problem with functionality. But as we started to understand it more and more, we realized it was a compressed air issue. And then when we started to discover it a little more, we realized that there were step up compressors on the lines, which use an incredible amount of volume in order to step up the pressure of the lines. And it was really, really wreaking havoc with the whole system. So where we started investigating one specific piece of equipment that wasn't effectively operating, where we ended up was dealing with a completely different problem, completely outside of the area of focus.
All right. So what you found by doing that was we were actually dealing with a different problem or almost a subset of that original problem statement that you had. So we had to refine and dive into it a bit deeper, correct?
Absolutely. Yep. Refine your problem statement. You know, in some cases, completely rewrite your problem statement as your scope changes. And it doesn't always change, but just be aware that it can. And if it does, that's fine. Just make sure that you communicate that to your team, just like you would a vision and a mission from that perspective. The other thing I think I'll mention too at this point is don't be afraid to switch tools. So if you start out investigating with five whys and you realize, you know what, this just isn't enough. I'm not getting all of the information that I need. Well, don't be afraid to take that five whys and branch it out into a fault tree. You know, now you take that five whys, you add in those additional causal factors, and now you can understand all of the things that allowed something to happen. And it goes back to that comment I made earlier in the opening about actions and conditions. You know, if you want to consider both the actions or instantaneous things that happened and the conditions or things that existed over time, then you're going to have to use something more than a 5Y to be able to see all of those elements.
All right. So don't be afraid to change our problem statement. Don't be afraid to change the tools that we're using as we uncover information, better understand the scope of the problem, those sorts of things. We have to be flexible when we're solving problems.
Absolutely.
Any more tips before we move on? I guess I should check first. You got any more?
Well, let me look. I think the only thing before we move on to the solution side, if you're using the tree tools, and for the tree tools for us is things like five whys branching into fault tree and then adding ands and ors and it becoming a logic tree. We refer to those as the tree tools. And if you're using those tools, one thing I will challenge people with is make sure you're digging down into the systemic and latent roots. And I'll try to make a point here and then use an example. Many, many times when I review RCAs that have been done by students or they've been done by others, what I see is, well, the line was down for 4 hours. Well, okay, why was the line down? Well, the line was down because the gearbox broke. Okay, cool. Well, why did the gearbox break? Well, it was broke because the bearing locked up. And then that's it. And that's all I get. And in reality, while you are drilling down, you are drilling down into merely the physical roots of the problem, the things that you can see. Underneath those physical roots are these things we call human roots. And this is another place that a lot of people stop too soon, and it becomes blame analysis instead of root causes analysis. So an example here would be, you know, well, the gearbox locked up because the bearing seized, and the bearing seized because Bubba beat it in with a sledgehammer the last time he replaced it. So if you stop at that human root and don't continue on, I mean, what are you going to do? Fire Bubba? That won't fix anything. And if you find yourself in a situation like that, I'm pretty sure there's somebody else in the organization that has the same beliefs and is doing the same kind of things. So drill down past those physical and human roots into what we call the systemic and then latent roots. Systemic are the systems that allow Bubba to make the decision to hit that bearing with a hammer. And the latent roots are the things at an organizational level that allow the systems to exist that allow Bubba to hit that bearing with a hammer. So an easy example would be a systemic root may be that there's no work expectation or work standard. Another systemic root would be that there was no training provided, although I caveat and always say that that can't be your only answer. And then a latent root might be that the organization doesn't believe in precision maintenance. It's never really been something we focused on, and therefore we don't expect work standards and we don't expect people to use bearing heaters and that sort of thing. And so that is a quick trip all the way down through the physical, then the human, then the systemic, and then the latent roots. What I will tell you is a lot of people are like, well, I don't want to solve a problem at the latent root. I can't change the organization's attitude toward precision maintenance. And that's completely acceptable. You may indeed put your solutions in place at a higher level in the tree. But if you don't understand what the latent roots are that are causing the problem, your solution may be affected by those latent roots. So I suggest that A, don't think about solutions until you've truly understood the problem all the way to the systemic and latent roots. And B, it's perfectly okay to put a solution in place at a systemic level and maybe even a human level, but you need to understand those latent roots to make sure that that's not going to cause more problems with the solution that you've put in play.
All right. Excellent. So we got to make sure we solve down to the systemic and latent levels to make sure they're effective, to make sure that we are going to reduce the risk of those things occurring. And, you know, like you said, latent is not always the easiest level to solve, but if we understand what's going on there, we might be able to tackle it and solve many more problems, right?
That's exactly right. I always think of systemic roots are my targets. That's where I hope I can find solutions. Latent roots are my goals. So if I look at the fact that bearing was beat in onto the shaft with a hammer, you know, when I get into systemic, I might write a work standard and I might make sure the bearing heater is available for the job and make sure the job is planned and kitted so that those parts are there. But in the long term, the goal is to get the organization to better understand that precision maintenance is important. So in the long term, I'm going to be addressing that. In the short term, I will be addressing specific work standards.
We've talked a lot about facilitating root cause analysis. What is the one thing you hope that a good facilitator and root cause analysis will bring to organizations?
the facilitator needs to understand that it's not about them, it's about the group. So, you know, it's not about their opinions or their thoughts or their solutions or, you know, their experience. It's really about them being able to pull the collective group's experience forward. Now, there are exceptions to that, you know, when you're doing a small investigation on a small item like we talked about earlier. But when you're in these big settings where you've got a full group, as a facilitator, your job is to put that group first and you second. Not to say that you can't add information in where you have something to add, but make sure it's very clear that yours is just as challengeable as any of theirs.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. Now, if you had a magic wand, what is the one thing you would change in regards to how organizations and the facilitators lead or perform root cause analysis activities or events?
Man, if I had a magic wand, I would make more people do more root causes. I think the biggest problem with root cause today is that a lot of people get trained and they don't go back and do. And the more you do, the better you'll get. The more you do, the faster you'll get. And but the issue is, you know, most people don't go back and do a lot of root causes. And I'm not suggesting necessarily that, you know, you've got to do 10 or 15 root causes a month. In reality, if you're doing, you know, two or three good, well thought out root cause investigations per month, not five whys, but digging deeper, you know, getting down into those systemic and latent roots, considering those actions and conditions, if you're really putting the effort into it, you're going to see a step change in the performance of the organization just on two or three for each facilitator.
Yeah, I think that is absolutely correct. You know, I don't want to see 10, 20, 30 a month from an individual facilitator because I know the quality is not going to be there. I want two or three well-done analysis with actions that are going to eliminate that problem from reoccurring, or at least reduce the level of it reoccurring to an acceptable level of risk for us. That level being dependent upon the organization. It's only when we do that is when we're really going to start to see the step change in performance, like you mentioned.
Well, and that's the only reason I said what I said about the software is, you know, if I can get guys doing two or three a month, that's not going to build this huge database full of root causes necessarily, unless you've got, you know, 20 or 30 facilitators. But what it does is it really goes after those problems. It shows results, and those results allow us to do the steps that we need to do to make it more efficient in the future.
Yes, absolutely. Now, we talked a lot about root cause analysis, facilitating root cause analysis. What is the one thing you want our listeners to take away from the conversation today that they can go do differently tomorrow?
One thing would be challenge your assumptions. If you're a subject matter expert and you're leading root cause investigations and facilitating root cause investigations, remember you're there to support the group in coming down into those latent roots. You're not there to tell them what happened. And if you have to share information because you are the SME, make sure that you're challenging your assumptions. I can't tell you how many times over the years someone has told me about a 5Y that they did where they wrote down their favorite solution and then backed their way in to the problem. And that's easy for an SME to do. And so really challenge your assumptions as you get into this process and don't lead the group down the wrong path.
All right. Excellent. Well, Sean, I know you're a busy guy. I want to thank you for taking the time today to talk to us about root cause analysis and getting the most out of it, leveraging our facilitators. But before we go, where can people find out more about you? What events, activities are you going to be at? And do you have any favorite resources on RCA that you want to share?
Oh, great. Yeah. So coming up, I'm going to be at the SMRP Symposium. After that, the SMRP Conference. I will also be traveling around to a few other events. If you want to learn more about where I'll be, or if you want to meet up and chat about your root cause problems, we can do that. Probably the best way to get a hold of me is my email. And I know you'll put this in the notes, but I'll go ahead and give it. It's seisenhower@iridicio.com. I do have some additional information on root cause analysis available on my blog. If you go to reliabilitynow.com and click on the RCA word cloud, RCA in the word cloud down below, it'll take you to various articles I've written when I've discovered something or when I made another mistake and figured out that that wasn't the right thing to do. So you can see some of those examples there. And you know, hey, if you'd like to learn more about root causes and you want to dive a little deeper, join us for one of our RCA classes. I promise you'll leave with a new perspective for how to solve problems.
All right. Excellent. I will put links to all of that in the show notes. Once again, I appreciate you taking the time today to talk to us about root cause analysis. I definitely have some more takeaways. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.